The next case on the calendar is David Jerome Robinson versus Disciplinary Counsel. Mr. Haddon.
Thank you, Justice Pfeiffer. Justices, good morning. My name is Bruce Haddon. I represent Dave Robinson in connection with. Oh, thank you. People here were taller before.
Not smarter, though.
Represent Dave Robinson in connection with this proceeding. With the court's permission, I'll refer to him as either Dave or Dave Robinson. I met Dave when he and my son and another lawyer by the name of Jim Petrie were all residing in an apartment while they were attending the Ohio State University Law School. So I've known him as that name for quite a period of time. I've also would like to thank the court. I've already thanked Mr. Berger for his consent to, but the court for continuing the case that was set a couple of weeks ago while I was hospitalized.
And a tribute to Chief Justice Moyer. He never liked to continue a case, but in your case, you convinced him it was the right thing to do.
Well, I do appreciate that, and I was checking out of the hospital about the time that Chief Justice was checking in, and unfortunately, I didn't realize that. But anyway, I do appreciate that. If possible, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. I know that becomes somewhat of a problem here, given the questions that you undoubtedly will present. We have a considerable dispute with what we regard as the board's flawed report. And underlying all of that is the litigation of Schottenstein versus Robinson. And that litigation was, as you all realize, an action taken by Dave Robinson's former employee. The purpose of that litigation was to preclude Mr. Robinson from communicating with his former clients and to preclude his attempting to employ any other associates or employees with the Schottenstein law firm. Now, the first element was absolutely wrong in the sense that he and Schottenstein both had an obligation to communicate with Dave's former clients and advise them that upon Dave's separation from that law firm, that the clients had an absolute right to either stay with Schottenstein, to go with Dave, or to seek new counsel. So the litigation was opposed on that basis. The second level involved in the litigation was the attempt to hire other employees away, and that never occurred, and that issue really never arose. But so much of what has happened in the disciplinary proceeding and what later developed following Dave's admitted destruction and wrongful destruction of documents in his possession, that it would appear as though the underlying litigation were all about documents, and it simply was not. The whole issue in that case, as I said, were the other matters. It was trying to preclude him from communicating with clients. The other issue that came up rather rapidly was the dates in this thing. Dave Robinson was an equity partner in the Schottenstein firm. He was terminated on August 14. He was hired by the Porter firm on August 15. He was sued on August 23rd. He had a deposition taken on August 27th, and then they were in a court hearing August 29 and a couple other hearing dates after that. Now, that's a pretty rapid transformation, even for people who are used to the trial procedure. But for someone who had no involvement with that during his entire practice, it was an unusual event. Our dispute with the board.
What was and is the general nature of his practice?
General nature of his practice was lobbying activities and government, getting money from government for projects and trying to get government approvals. So it was totally out of the trial field. The board.
Go ahead.
It looked like you had another question.
No. Go. Keep going.
Okay. The board. In its opinion, did not even acknowledge, much less give Dave any credit for self-reporting. Now, Dave self-reported in really two venues. One of them was in the Common Pleas Court, that after he destroyed some documents that were in his possession, and these were documents that were copies that were generated from Schottenstein's computer. So the documents all existed. But after he disclosed those documents and then told his counsel about the destruction of the documents, we then all went in and we had a full disclosure to the court.
So are you saying there really is – there was no spoilation of evidence because the evidence – the same information contained on the documents that he destroyed was still retained on the Schottenstein computers and could be regenerated
in
precisely the same form?
Exactly the same form, the same thing. The only other thing that was...
And it was not hidden in some place that the Schottenstein firm couldn't find it. I mean, you can have information on your computer, but not know it's there.
That's correct. There was no claim of spoliation. There was no detriment to the Schottenstein firm by virtue of his destroying his documents.
But in terms of the case, was it relevant as to what documents he had in his possession, even if they were copies? Was that relevant to the litigation?
Not really with the major issues that they were going for. In other words, what they wanted to do is preclude him from communicating with clients. He had about 10 or 12 clients. I mean, his clients are big clients, and they tend to generate significant fees. But it wasn't like somebody with a workers' comp practice where you got 600 or 1,000 clients. He did not have that. Plus the fact all of his lobbying clients are registered. So he could give them back every document they had, walk over to the State House, and get everybody's name and address, not that he needed them. He knew what they all were. So he did not need those documents. As I say, the documents only became an issue as a result of his destruction of them and then disclosure. And that's where we get to the self-reporting. It was a difficult situation. I mean, he first of all had to disclose to me. I'm older than his parents. He then has to disclose to his former employee. Former employer. He then has to disclose to Porter, his present employer. So he's got to go through all of these disclosures within the Common Pleas Court, as well as disclosing to Judge Chuck Snyder, who had been a friend of both David and his wife, Julie Dorian, who's a judge.
So you're saying, what's the relevance of the fact that this was difficult to do?
Difficult to admit you made a mistake and disclose documents? I'm just saying he, in spite of the fact that it was difficult, he went ahead and made that full disclosure.
He didn't have any choice.
Nobody would have known he had thrown away the documents if he had not told them that he did so. You're correct. As a lawyer, he has an ethical duty to do so. You know, and that is regardless of whether anybody knows about it. But from a practical standpoint, that's a right that the lawyer in that situation has to face.
Mr. Haddon, does this case boil down to the fact that your client destroyed documents that he had denied were in his possession? There was an element of deceit because there were some searching for it. Am I overcharacterizing or undercharacterizing the case?
Well, I think that's the board's characterization, and I think in all fairness, it is an overcharacterization for this reason. Documents were not in dispute, and when David, as this hearing is rapidly progressing, he was asked a series of questions about documents. The lead question in that series was, what documents did you take after you left Government Advocates, which was the Schottenstein lobbying arm? Well, he didn't take any because he couldn't. He couldn't get access to their computers. He couldn't do anything. The other practical matter is they had photographs of him taking a whole bunch of documents out of the law firm. But the relevant documents are a stack of papers about that high.
Yes, but those documents were then destroyed so no one could recover them from his possession after there was an investigation and a search, right?
Correct.
Okay. And the board has made a recommendation here of a sanction of 2 years, am I right?
2 years with nothing suspended.
And what is your request of us in as you see the case law from our court, as would be an appropriate sanction from your standpoint? Mr. Haddon?
Appropriate sanction from our opinion. He's suffered a great deal. He's lost his job. He's lost everything
else.
Pardon
me, please.
I'm sorry. David has suffered a great deal in the sense that he's lost his job with poor, you know, he's out on his own. He's done a lot of things. My suggestion for a sanction would either be a limited sanction with a suspension of anything over 6 months, or a public reprimand. And I'll direct that because of the rules involved in this matter. The board relied upon 3.4, and Section 3 of the code is designated as advocate. And if you run down through all of the provisions under that section, they clearly relate to advocates. They point to 3.4, which is fairness to opposing party and counsel. But they've got a whole bunch of other things in there, you know, meritorious claims and contentions, expediting litigation. All the things under 3 relate to an advocate. He's not an advocate. And in all fairness, if somebody wanted to impose some of those sanctions on me, under my son who does litigation, maybe they could. But to impose those on somebody who is really just a defendant and a client in litigation.
Your view is that the destruction of the documents didn't affect any pending litigation. This was something in the employment dispute or something of that nature. Is that your
That's correct.
Argument?
Destruction of documents did not affect anything.
Is there any case where there have been documents destroyed and some deceit about that where we've imposed a public reprimand that we could look to or that you're citing to us?
Under the destruction of documents, no. We do point to the Niemeyer case, which is one where, and that's at 119 Ohio State, 399. That's where there was a self-reporting of a lawyer who really double-stamped a workers' comp document so that he could bring himself within a, or try to bring himself within a statute of limitations. And in the Niemeyer case, the lawyer who did that self-reported. This court recognized that as a strong mitigating factor and therefore stayed the entire sanction.
Mr. Haddon, I'm confused that the board's findings of fact, paragraphs 20 and 21, seem to suggest, give a different perspective on what happened here. Because they're talking about the August 29th, 2007 hearing.
Yes.
The statement at paragraph 20 is immediately after the testimony denying that there was any confidential information, the respondent disposed of a confidential document in a trash receptacle, and this document had been in his possession at the time of the testimony. In paragraph 21, that after that court hearing that day, the respondent went home and stopped three times, disposing of documents in random trash receptacles. That seems to be a bit different from what, you know, the impression that we have. Where did the panel come up with that language? Do you know?
Well, they came up with that language from his statement to the court, his ultimate statement to the court. There's no question that he disposed of documents. And we've never denied
immediately
that.
After the testimony saying that he did not have them in his possession, because that seems to be the real concern here, that there was sworn testimony, I don't have any documents, and then immediately thereafter getting rid of them. That seems to be the problem.
That's his testimony. His testimony was, if you followed up completely, was that when he came out of the court, he had a notebook. He discovered those particular records in it. He didn't realize they had them. His basic position has been he shouldn't have had those documents, and therefore he destroyed them. But that is frankly what occurred. But he has admitted that. He's come in and said, "Yes, I did it. It was wrong, you know, and I'm sorry, you know."
So did those documents accidentally ended up in his possession, unwittingly, unknowingly?
The only document that we would contend that. May have ended up in his possession was a document that a private investigator hired by Schottenstein found in Judge Dorian's desk, which was a July 3rd listing of documents. And Dave says he doesn't know how that got there.
Okay. Let me ask you another question. You said that his primary responsibilities or expertise or employment is in the area of lobbying?
Yes.
And you don't need a law license to lobby, do you?
Don't need a law license to lobby. He would like to keep his law license. He went through law school. He has an interest in being a lawyer.
But as far as the average lawyer that comes in here and you know, is advocating for less of a sanction, it's because they would like to continue to practice law and their livelihood depends on it. But his livelihood depends on being a lobbyist, and the law degree is not relevant to his ability to lobby. He will still be able to be a representative, a lobbyist, involved in government relations, correct?
That's absolutely correct. The same as a tax attorney could lose his license and still give tax advice.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Haddon.
Thank you.
You've blown through your whole 15 minutes. We'll give you a little bit if you need it after Mr. Berger. Mr. Berger.
Thank you so much.
May it please the Court, Robert Berger for Relator, Office of Disciplinary Counsel. The respondent in this matter, David Robinson, repeatedly gave false and misleading testimony at his deposition and during a court hearing about his removal and retention of law firm documents. On August 3rd and 4th of 2007, it's undisputed that the respondent removed 7 boxes of materials from his former law firm while the staff was away at retreat. 3 weeks later, on August 27th, 2007, he was asked whether he removed documents or whether he currently possessed documents, to which he testified, "Not that I know of, not that I recall." Subsequently, at a September 20th, 2007 court hearing, he was asked a series of questions about whether he had removed documents and possessed documents. The attorney representing the law firm had already obtained security video of the respondent removing the documents on August 3rd and 4th, and started out asking very broad questions about what the respondent possessed, and then went in to the point of asking him, "Did you remove documents on August 3rd and 4th? Throughout all of the respondent's testimony, he maintained he did not recall whether or not he had removed documents, despite the fact he had done so 3 weeks earlier. And these 7 boxes of documents required the respondent to make 5 trips in and out of the building to his vehicle. Certainly that's not something that one wouldn't recall 3 weeks later.
Counsel, that, as Justice Lansinger points out, seems to be what really set the panel off, was the false testimony under oath and false testimony to a judge regarding this activity. Is that your take on what's driving the recommended outcome from the panel recommended a year out, the board too?
That's correct, Your Honor.
What are you recommending? What is the disciplinary counsel recommending?
Your Honor, at the hearing, we requested 1 year, but we understand the board's reasoning in ordering 2 years, and I would offer to you the board's decision was based upon several factors. First, I think they had grave concerns about the pattern of dishonesty. Also, if you read the board's report closely, I think you'll see that they also had grave concerns that 2 years later, at the hearing in September of 2009, the respondent was still maintaining no responsibility for the dishonesty. He was still making excuses and trying to make explanations for why what had happened other than taking personal responsibility.
So, but as we're to understand how this unfolded, at the hearing itself, disciplinary counsel's position was 1 year out is the appropriate sanction for what occurred here.
That's correct. That's what we advocated for.
I'm curious about one other thing. It is collateral to all of this, but I believe I heard Mr. Haddon say that a private investigator for the Schottenstein firm found a document in Judge Dorian's desk. How on earth does a private investigator for a law firm get access to a judge's desk?
Your Honor, those facts are not fully developed in the transcript, and I think they're solely based upon the testimony of the respondent. As I understand it, based upon the respondent's testimony, they were in the process of building a new home. They were still living in their old home. Perhaps there was an open house, and a private investigator came in during the open house, and the desk that was of concern was at
the
home.
Well, that sort of muddies the water a little, doesn't it, in terms of the clean hands of the Schottenstein firm?
It's our position in this matter, Your Honor, that this case is not an issue of a dispute between an attorney and their former firm. It's the issue of false testimony under oath.
I understand that.
The subsequent destruction of the documents. When the respondent was testifying.
But what would the disciplinary counsel do if it discovered a law firm directed or allowed or took advantage of their employed private investigator entering a private residence and going through the desk of a judge?
What I would tell you, Your Honor, is certainly I don't believe any such grievance has been received by our office. Also, I believe there was a counterclaim filed in the litigation.
When you become aware of something like that, you don't have to wait to get a grievance reported, do you? Your office.
I'm not sure I understand
okay.
the question.
Well, let's move on.
All right.
Mr. Berger, I have a question. On the you said 2009 was the testimony. Is that what the panel was referring to regarding the disposal of certain documents immediately after the testimony?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I think I may have confused the issue. The testimony I was referring to in September 2009 was the respondent's testimony at the disciplinary hearing.
Okay. I was referring to the panel's paragraphs 20 and 21. I wonder where that came from because it's stated as a fact. Did the respondent stipulate to that, or where did the idea that he was seen disposing of documents in trash receptacles immediately after testifying?
With regard to the destruction of the documents, the respondent admitted that during a lunch break on his testimony on August 29th of 2007, he went to a restroom and disposed of a document that he had previously testified he either did not possess or did not recall possessing.
And this came from the respondent himself.
That's correct. And then later that evening, after the court had concluded, he went home, loaded boxes in his car, and while driving through downtown Columbus, disposed of documents and random trash receptacles. That was information based upon the respondent's admissions.
Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
A couple of issues I would like to address based upon the argument of respondents' counsel. First, it's been suggested that the respondent's lack of experience somehow contributed to his misconduct. Relator would just point out that the respondent is somebody with extraordinary experience at the highest levels of the legal profession and government. He served as a state representative. He was a partner in a major law firm. He created a lobbying entity that earned over $1 million a year. As such, his claims of inexperience and lack of knowledge ring hollow. Respondent also argued that the destruction of these documents caused no harm to his law firm and therefore were not problematic. As the board found, Relator would point out, the issue was not that the respondent was destroying original documents and thereby depriving his firm of those documents. It was that he destroyed documents to conceal the fact that he had possessed them, and he destroyed the documents to conceal the fact that his testimony that he did not possess them was false. Respondent's counsel also suggested that these documents had no practical value to the respondent. That is proven to be incorrect by the respondent's own admission that he used some of these very documents while interviewing for other jobs. He was sharing billing records and engagement letters to other potential firms to show his worth in being employed, and as such, these documents did have a value.
Have those documents been reproduced and returned or recreated?
Your Honor, during the litigation, ultimately, all the documents in the respondent's possession were returned to the law firm, except for the ones that had been destroyed. That's my understanding.
Okay.
Respondent suggested he should receive substantial credit for self-reporting his misconduct. Relator would just point out that the respondent self-reported the destruction of documents while maintaining that it was not a disciplinary violation and did not acknowledge in any self-report letter he'd engaged in dishonest conduct. Finally, respondent suggests that the Niermeyer case is controlling in determining the appropriate sanction in this matter. In the Niermeyer case, Niermeyer filed one falsified document, self-reported it, and fully admitted his dishonesty. It was that combination of facts that led the court to determine that Niermeyer should receive a state suspension. In the present matter, the respondent is continuing to maintain his actions were not deceptive and were not in violation of the disciplinary rules up until today. As such, Relator would request this court adopt the board's report and suspend the respondent for 2 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berger. Mr. Haddon, Mr. Berger left 6 minutes on the table. Well, you don't get it.
I assumed that was going to follow.
All right.
Very briefly, let me just say, with respect to the self-reporting, I know this court has done a tremendous job with substance abuse problems, and admittedly, in many of those cases, the conduct of the persons charged with disciplinary matters while under the influence of substance abuse was pretty bad. But the court has recognized and encouraged them to come forward, and they encourage them to come forward because that provides a benefit to the public, that they ultimately say what happened. You know, we're just suggesting the same thought ought to be given to self-reporting under this relatively new rule, which is self-reporting of conduct which might, not necessarily does, but which might constitute.
Thank you, Mr. Haddon.
Thank you.